Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Good morning, good evening, good night, NBN Entrepreneurship and Leadership.
Personally, I'm fascinated by the story.
Trust is an underrated weapon in the business landscape.
I'm a really, really strong believer in learning by doing.
What's the definition of success?
You're trying to come up with an answer to the question. But go ahead, Richard.
You could be right, but you're wrong. This is a bit of an unusual podcast in that this is the one where we introduce why we're doing it and what it's all about. And I'd like to kick off by asking my co-host and business partner, Kimon Fontakidis, to introduce himself.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, my story is maybe somewhat unusual. Anyway, I'm an American who ended up living in Krakow, Poland. I ended up founding two companies, one called PMR, which does market research, consulting, and some business publications, and another one called Argos Multilingual, which is basically a translation localization company. It helps global companies get their content into lots of other languages. I think the combined companies, they employ well over 200 people. And I don't know what the revenues are, maybe like over 30, maybe $30 million of revenue. So, you know, whatever, just sort of like nice size companies. It's been a fun ride. How about you, Richard? How did you get into this entrepreneurship and business world?
Well, I actually, we're recording this on the 1st of February 2021, and yesterday was the 30th anniversary of my move to Poland, which is that means I've been in Poland for 30 years, and I'm British by birth and origin, but I'm a Polish citizen as you are now. I've spent most of my life in Poland because I'm 54 years old, and I have been involved in many businesses and was very lucky to meet you and invest in Argos and PMR when they were much, much smaller businesses than they are today.
Yeah, but you've invested in, Argos and PMR, your list of companies, Richard is a serial investor. How many companies have you invested in?
Probably about 30, 35 altogether. I've started or been there right at the beginning. And of those, 19 are no longer with us. And that's actually not such a bad strike rate. But the first company I ran that achieved some kind of market success was called SKK, which was doing barcode scanners, printers, labels, and software. And basically in the 1990s, that was the first company of its type in Poland after the end of communism. And the money I made doing that was what I invested in the companies Kimon founded. And that's how we got into business together. So
yeah, on a high level, I've done only two and Richard's done 30. So I think we have different types of lessons. I think I've come from a in-depth, I've been grinding it out, all the details of the business, and Richard has been like a super investor. Like I think you've seen a lot more than me, probably.
Our experiences are different, but we overlap, and we've got, as foreigners who came to Poland both for personal reasons and then both went into business, not in the sort of big corporate world. We've got quite a lot of things in common and there are significant differences, which actually is one of the reasons we think this podcast should be a good listen. But I've been podcasting for longer. You're new to it, Kimon. And why did you want to get involved in this channel? What was your
big reason? I'm personally, I'm fascinated fascinated by the story and what makes people become entrepreneurs, basically, because it's such a rare. I don't know how many people wish they had their own business or set out to, you know, they have all those statistics about the 1 in 10 succeeds and all that stuff, but the people we're going to invite are going to obviously be people that have had some degree of success. And so I think it's just going to be fascinating to try to understand what do these people have in common. We've actually already recorded a couple of episodes, and I can already sense like some of the commonalities that are come through. And we can talk about these, Richard. I mean, the one that's sort of come out, I think, with almost everybody is what we would call grit, which means just never giving up, keep trying, not being afraid to ask questions, ready to do sort of crappy things for a long time.
It's very interesting because I totally agree with what Kimon said. And I was 3 times CEO, twice in one company and once in PMR, which Kimon founded. But a lot of the time I haven't been in charge, whereas Kimon built up particularly Argos Multilingual to be, you know, like top 50 in the world, one of the top 50 in the world. So a really big market success. So our experiences as leaders were different. But there's this concept of like the self-confident entrepreneur, which in the sort of stereotype is a very arrogant person. But we've both observed that the really good leaders are quite humble because they've got enough self-confidence to know that they're not perfect and not to admit that and not be afraid to admit they're wrong.
Ultimately, they're also smart enough to realize that they're dependent on a whole bunch of other people to be successful. So nobody wants to hang out with sort of somebody that's full of themselves and that seems to always have the right answers.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the beginning of this because as is obvious, if you look at the page on the MBN channel, there's a lot of interviews that I did prior to starting doing them together with Kimon, and not all entrepreneurs are the same. And obviously, we're only going to invite people onto the show who we think are interesting, and quite a few will be from our personal network, and then we're sort of looking around. But although these are our observations, it's going to be very interesting for us when we meet someone who challenges our assumptions. Because
so I threw out grit as my first one. I have a couple others, but why don't you throw out, like, what are you interested in? Like, what are you trying to, like, what do you want to hear about from these people?
Well, I've been really interested in entrepreneurship as a sort of approach to life, partly because I think it's for people who don't necessarily fit in. Right now, at the time we're recording this, entrepreneurship has become very fashionable with sort of celebrity status, big media entrepreneurs. But a while back, it just wasn't the case. That maybe in Europe, it might be different in America, but in Europe, being an entrepreneur wasn't so cool. And it was the sort of classic route for someone who didn't fit into the normal structures of society, and, you know, they didn't have the personal skills or the good looks to smooch their way through the corporation. And I'm really interested in the background, the childhood, what sort of upbringing people had, how far were they spoiled, were their parents very strict, or did they push them, or, you know, what was their schooling like, was it from society, friends, family, where did
that's a big one for me as well. Education, you're sort of touching on education. I think that's one you and I, Richard, went to prestigious college, Cambridge, and
I come from this sort of privileged British, educationally privileged British background. My father was a professor in Oxford. I studied at Cambridge, and a lot of the people there come from, you know, whether they're very smart or very privileged, basically you're not growing up with a typical bunch of people where the expectations are very high, and your peer group is destined by their birth and
right
genetic
and the counterbalance to that, that's why I think it's so interesting, also why I think it's kind of fun that we're doing it together, is that I come from a completely, I came from a privileged background, a middle class background. I went to university, but like my experience with university was like basically it was party town USA, and it wasn't I didn't really put any work into it, and I didn't really get anything out of it, and I'm a really, really strong believer in learning by doing. And I'm not saying that this is going to come out throughout the thing, is that, you know, this is definitely not, there's not only one way to get into the finish line. There's not only one way to be successful, but I do think that just at least from my perspective, like I don't hold education is as high regard as a lot of other people.
No, and I also think it's remarkable when I look at my education, and this is confirmed by talking to many entrepreneurs from many different countries, how the things that are really useful in business aren't the things that lead to business success. Sorry, so the things that are really useful in business aren't taught by the universities and the high schools. So, you know, it's things like being well organized, having good interpersonal skills, being good at time management.
Yeah, I know you're big on that. Yeah, you're big on quantifying those types of things. Like time management's always been a big one for you.
But they're just not taught, you know, and so you can be extremely academically talented, get a first class degree, and never have a 5 or 10 minutes on how to run a meeting effectively. And so you get these people who are extremely clever, and it wouldn't take them long to pick up the basic skills, but they've not been taught, and then people expect them just to...
So much of it, though, and this is what's interesting, and this comes out with a couple of the guests as well, some of it, I think, is just human skills, like actually knowing people and knowing how to interact with people and knowing how to push buttons and try to get various responses and from people. So I don't know whether it's like social psychology or just your general sort of emotional intelligence, your ability to handle people.
And Kimin, you were downplaying your intelligence, but I know you studied psychology, and I've often thought that...
No, I was not downplaying my intelligence. I was downplaying my education.
Well, I mean, you know, let's say it would be very difficult to downplay your enormous intelligence, obviously, because that would be ridiculous. But the point I was going to make was that the psychology, I noticed that you were very good at like forming judgments on people, not always right, but very good at it compared to many people. I remember you asked 3 questions, like when you went into negotiation, it was what do they say they want, what do they think they want, and what do they really want. And there's this concept that other people aren't always completely rational, and standard sales training will be ask questions, figure out what they want.
Yeah.
But there's this deeper level of sort of like looking what's behind the answers, which
I mean, the classic is when you, and this is beyond, okay, you can be selling a service or a product, but also like if you're in the startup world and you're trying to get investors, you know, a lot of people focus on themselves. And that's the really, that's the big mistake. You need to focus on the other side. Like what does the person you're talking to really want? What do they really care about? Do they even really care at all about the problem that you're trying to solve? And maybe you should be talking to them about something else. But back to the education thing, it was funny because Richard, you asked me to sort of guest lecture in one of your, because you actually teach entrepreneurship, and which I found to be such a foreign concept. How can you possibly teach entrepreneurship? I mean, I know you can, I think, and maybe your tactic was to give just a, hey, here's an example of an entrepreneur look, but I'm not sure. Like, are you able to teach entrepreneurship?
It's a question on which there's more than one opinion, and there are strong conflicting opinions on that one. But there's definitely, if it's done badly, I say there are two types of entrepreneurship professor. There are the zoologists who sort of study entrepreneurs in the same way that a zoologist studies animals, and they sort of like see what the entrepreneur eats and what, you know, how much exercise it needs. And then there are the entrepreneurship academics who like are a bit more like the racehorse or the trainer or the dog trainer, who actually teach the entrepreneur to be a better entrepreneur. And I'm 100% convinced that and the people who've been entrepreneurs tend to be better mentors and instructors and lecturers, because they've been there and they've done that and they know what they're talking about. And so, you know, provided someone's got the right preparation, they can definitely tell people lots of useful things. And it's sometimes they're very basic, not very academic things, like if you want to be an entrepreneur, you need to get good at handling rejection. Just simple stuff, you know. You meet this famous guy, and he says, there's a guy in Cambridge called Jonathan Milner who's set up the first antibody. He could manufacture antibodies, which he was selling to pharma companies. And the company was almost out of business. Nothing was working. And he was wandering around the labs of Cambridge with a bucket full of ice and test tubes full of these antibodies. And, you know, these days he looks like the chairman of a big public listed company because he is. But back in the day, he was doing really sort of low prestige stuff. And just hearing that, you know, the people who are famous now were doing really basic things at the start of the journey, and you know, making sure that people realize that that's real. It's not just Hollywood. It's actually real. I'm sure you've done, because one of the things for our listeners, you know, we've both built up companies from the start. We've seen the, you know, and it's sometimes it's
blood, sweat, and tears.
Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's cool. Sometimes you know, everyone's impressed. And other times,
but usually it's boring.
Is
just boring. Mundane tasks. It's getting the small stuff right. It's not as sexy, and it's getting the small stuff right, like consistently. I would say is a huge piece of it.
Yeah, you have an, or even like you're doing something that sounds very exciting, and so making a strategy, but at the end of the meeting, you have to sit down and write it down,
right.
Do a meeting summary, distribute it to the people who were there, put a date on it, and if you don't do that, you just end up with chaos. So it's a mixture.
You said something that maybe we should call the podcast The Zoologist, because that's how I am understanding, that's what I'm interested in, is observing, is what's the makeup of all these different interesting people, and like what drove them to do what they did, because you know, we're still talking about a relatively small number of people that actually make it, and trying to understand those commonalities. I think that's fascinating, actually.
Yeah. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
I totally with you on that, and I think that it's you know, as someone, we're also trying to like draw out lessons that if I hear people saying things that either is a perfect example, because we ask people to give examples, a perfect example of, you know, the problems of recruiting people. It's very hard when you start a business to get people to come on board and join your company, because you're competing against the big IT companies, the Unilevers, the government, and then you've got Crazy Richard or Weird Keeman with their little four-person startup, and you know, your mother and father and your friends are going to be really surprised you decide to join a little company rather than a normal one.
Because that's why they're usually the weird ones that join as well.
Yeah, well, some to any of our wonderful co-workers listening, we're not talking about.
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, you know, it takes Richard. You're actually hitting the nail on the head. I mean, you know, you have to be able to take some risk, also from an employee perspective, that you're ready to join. Wow, this Kimon or this Richard. I mean, they sound like they have a good idea and they seem passionate about it, but. You know, it's not going to be, you know, is it going to be as safe a job as going to some other job? Or so, you know, it definitely takes certain people to join those companies as well.
Yeah. So it's, but you know, pulling out the lessons, and, you know, I think one of them, and some of the lessons that I draw from thinking a lot about entrepreneurship, is the things that work for entrepreneurs work for life. That, you know, if you, for example, this humility and leadership, you know, not being the know-it-all who tells everyone what to do, it's actually a very useful skill for the rest of life as well. You know, the guy who, the annoying boss is the annoying guy at the party, and vice versa, I would say, very, very often. But I don't know that's going to come out, but it's interesting for us. And I think because we're both interested in entrepreneurship and have been entrepreneurs for decades, and the people we're interviewing, typically they may not have been doing it for as long as us, because we're both in our 50s. I mean, Keeman is slightly younger than me. He's slightly younger than me. But he's still in his 50s. He's quite an old man.
I've just barely crossed that threshold.
In his 50s. Not more than 10 years away from 60. Anyway, we're both experienced in this, but the other people we invite on typically will have had some, you know, some of them are extremely successful, others are successful. Although another important point is what's the definition of success? And there are a couple of questions that we each have things we're interested in. You know, we're going to take people through their life story, their business story, trying to pick on major moments. What are particular things that you like to ask people, Kimon, when you've got an entrepreneur on the show and they're chatting away, and there are particular things that you find interesting?
I've already mentioned, I'm trying to sort of figure out about the grit, trying to figure out about the tenaciousness. I think that's something that I like, that I also want to just show. I think that's going to be a commonality that we're going to see. The education one that we mentioned, because already we've had both sides of the spectrum, people that haven't graduated from college, high school even, and people, that are very well educated. So, you know, there's both arguments there. I like to ask about competitiveness. I'm always curious, were people like playing sports, and how much was the will to win? And then where did that will come from? As sort of you were mentioning, like, was it the parents that created an environment where it was like, let's be very competitive in whatever we do? But my favorite one that I'm definitely going to ask everyone, and I think it sort of, I just think it's kind of an interesting one, is the question about luck. Is how much of your success do you attribute to your hard work and your skills versus how much is luck? And how would you answer that question, Richard?
I just want to continue. I will answer that question. And I was going to do before that, just in terms of the questions that we'll ask, because I think it's nice to keep them all together, because, we sometimes battle about structure. Normally, Kimon's extremely well organized and structured, and I'm all over the place. Sometimes it's the other way around. I think
basically, this is a huge BS story because you're trying to come up with an answer to the luck question. But go ahead, Richard.
You could be right, but you're wrong. what I think is also interesting is I already mentioned the family interest, who you're trying to impress. I think the degree of self-awareness in the entrepreneur is fascinating, because very often that evolves, that during their career, certainly in my case, that was the case, that people's sense of who they are and what they want to achieve in life is dramatically changed by business success, that you know, they thought it was all about X, and when they get there, they realize it's not all about X, which is why I like asking people where they're going next. That, you know, once someone's achieved some level of business success, it's not at all obvious what they want to do next. And usually what people want to do next is not guaranteed, which means that it's much more challenging for someone to move from where they are now to their future goals. It's easy to look back and say, well, I made it to here, because they know they've made it. So I like asking people where they go next. Coming to luck, I think I was extremely fortunate in some ways, that although there were some painful aspects of it, coming to Poland at the time I did meant that the savings I had from working in the UK went a lot further here. So I was able to get into the Polish business environment in the early days. And although it was extremely demanding, given how lamentably primitive my business skills were, I got into an environment where, you know, you could buy things for one and sell them for four at scale. And if you can't make a lot of money doing that, then there's something wrong. We weren't quite monopolists, but there were very other few people in the country doing what we did. And I think it is harder now. There are more opportunities, but it is harder now than it was back then. So I'd say, yes, I had a lot of luck, and I worked like crazy for a very long time. I really worked and worked, and I didn't regret it. I didn't feel it was work. I was building the company, so it wasn't a painful type of work, but it was work, I would say.
Cool. Yeah, I would say that you're not, I think you're being, you've somehow gotten to that position. And,
Well, you make your own. People say they make their own luck.
Yeah.
I think you did it. I did it. But it's getting yourself into a situation where you're ready to exploit the luck if it comes by as well. That, you know, for example, the classic is having savings. If you have a lot of stuff on credit, you've got an expensive boyfriend who's blowing all your money on stupid stuff, or a girlfriend, you've got relationships which suck cash out of your bank account, and you've got a lifestyle that sucks cash out of your bank account, which are very often the same thing. You have to have a big flat screen TV because all your friends have got the same things, and you hang out with people who are impressed by that sort of stuff, then you might have a great opportunity, but you can't afford to take it because you've got yourself locked into a situation where you need to go and earn the next month's salary.
Yeah, it's I completely agree. Obviously, not being, I mean, you and I are very similar in the respect that we just don't care about material assets and material things that much. So that's never been an issue for either of us. And I think a lot of people get caught up. But I think, once again, that's the ego.
Do you want me to list all the extravagant things you do, Kimo? I can tell them about the island.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of ego that gets wrapped up into stuff. And, you know, and I think that the bigger the issue you have with your ego, the more you end up getting stuff, and the more that, like, sort of that definition of success is wrapped up around you and how many people know you and how many people have heard of you and stuff like that. So I do think that that's a barrier. But you know, the luck thing, it's a slippery slope, because like I always, you know, basically, as you said, I tell people, I do believe you sort of create your own luck. But I think a big piece of it, and it's sort of an interesting one, and it has come out in the stories as well that we've already talked to, is that people seize the moment. It's also not being afraid to take a chance. It's not being afraid to gamble on something. And in my personal case, I think I'd say that that's one of my, let's say, bigger strengths. I'm ready to risk, and I'm ready to make a decision fast. And if I believe in it, if I have the gut instinct that this is worth trying, I'm ready to give it a shot, basically. And I think that was the same. I have to believe that was the same for you. You somehow met those. Come on, you didn't speak any Polish, or barely. I'm not sure how good your Polish was, and you just met some guys and you said, "Hey, guy," like somehow you got them to go into business with you. I remember you even telling me the story. You're like, and this is, I think, the best part about it. It's like you guys like wrote something down on the back of an envelope, like, this is how many shares I'm gonna have, this is how many shares you're gonna have. And then you went ahead and you spent all your money on the basis of that back of the envelope. And that's, I mean, so, you know, I mean, not a lot of, like, I think not a lot of people would do that. And I think that's a nice little sort of piece of that you sort of left out. I mean, 'cause you just basically said, here, you fronted the money and on the basis of the back of an envelope contract. So I'd say that,
you know,
that's,
I mean, I do think that trust is an underrated weapon in the business landscape, that obviously you have to be careful, and you know, you wouldn't do a huge transaction like selling a company or buying a house without the legals in place. But you can agree quite major things based on a handshake. It's a good idea to write down what it is. And, you know, there was a lack of professionalism to the way I did it that didn't address.
But also the bureaucracy, because I think another thing you and I hate is BS. Like, do we really want to go through massive bureaucracy? It's better to trust. Trust is the slayer of bureaucracy, basically. Trust is about efficiency. Actually, trust is, Richard, that's one we have to ask. We actually haven't asked anybody about trust. I think trust is a super interesting question.
It's a great question. And
because that's another thing we both have in common. And I've taken the personal approach that I'm going to get screwed over. But the ROI of trusting everybody and getting screwed over, in my case, has proven to be fantastic. Yeah, yes.
By ROI, you mean the return on investment rate?
Yes.
It's the idea that there's a payback to trust, and there certainly
is. No, there's a cost. There's an idea that there's a cost to trust, and the cost of a lack of trust is I have to micromanage, I have to check, I have to have contracts in place, and that is extraordinarily inefficient. So that's something actually that you and I really have, because you did the same thing that we just described with the back of the envelope thing, and I think I've done that like countless times. in my business history.
Yeah, there's a student from an African country who had a scholarship to Scandinavia. He had a very impressive CV. I remember he came to Poland, and I basically thought that possibly we could replicate what I'd done in Poland, where he came from, which was Ghana. And, you know, I gave him some money in a barcode scanner, and then I got a fax about 3 months later saying, send more money. And none of the things that he'd committed to actually happened. And, you know, maybe he was just unlucky, maybe it went wrong, but I lost it all, and that's not the most I've lost much more in other things, but ultimately you go into these things with your eyes open, and
yeah, but you also trusted me even getting into business. You barely knew me, you barely knew the businesses I was involved in, you put up a bunch of money, yeah, and you know, it worked out. I mean, I could have been a different person, and it could have been a different, yeah, you could have had a different outcome there.
And you know, and the lessons are so hard to generalize from. There are other people where I did broadly the similar thing and it went horribly wrong.
Right, so, exactly.
So you can't say, so please, you know, and I think that's one of the things I hope we'll do with this podcast is we'll have experienced business people who've done something, men and women who've done something, achieved something, sharing their lessons, will be commenting and comparing it to ours. And it's so much better to hear about someone else's catastrophe and then think, oh, well, I don't want to do what Richard did 20 years later. Because, you know, I also made genuine mistakes. And I think we'd both admit that from time to time.
I did not make mistakes.
You never, not a mistake. No, it's and we've got this big pool of shared experiences, some different ones. One of the things that I like doing is sharing from one of my teaching experiences. I do workshops in schools and preschools, universities, high schools, and I remember someone asked me a question about what sort of business partners you should look for, and I was reflecting on that when you were reflecting on you trusting me or me trusting you at the start of the business. And I said that you have to be a bit careful if you're early on in your business career, because your first business partners, it's a bit like first boyfriend or girlfriend. You're so happy that someone wants to go into business with you, you accept them without being as critical as you become later, once you've had been through a few relationships and you realize that there's more than one criteria. And there were four students sitting together, and I said, for example, you have to check there isn't one person in the team who's not really pulling their weight, and you know, has got involved and is sort of happily egging everyone else on to work like crazy, but isn't very good at anything. And there was a group of four students, and three of them all looked at the one in the middle, and it was obvious that he was that guy.
You know, I'm afraid and I feel like I'm that guy.
You're the guy.
the guy that had the questionable value.
Kiemann's also modest, and I know many of the people who've worked with and for him in the sort of in the upper echelons of the company and down at the coalface, in, you know, because sometimes Krakow is a small city, you sometimes meet people socially who, you know, turns out they work in the company, and the culture of the company is what the leadership defines. And by the way, I'm very interested in leadership, and there's something about an approach and values and attitude and example which permeates a culture, and you know, if that's the only thing you did, it's incredibly rewarding for the people who work there as well. So I think you can take that as a compliment.
But yeah, clearly,
this podcast won't be just a string of reciprocal. I don't know what, there's a nasty word for that, isn't there? It won't be a reciprocal.
No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to say that word, and I'm not going to compliment you anymore. So we can just forget about that. So we'll end it on my compliment, basically.
Thank you.
So maybe just in closing, like, we, you know, anybody who's listening to this, at this point, this is our promo bit. So it'll just be friends, family, people in our network. We encourage you guys to subscribe. I'll let Richard talk a little bit about, I think you should say a couple words about the new books network. This will be available wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll definitely also have a video version on YouTube. There'll be a channel there. So yeah, support us, subscribe. If you, we're going to obviously be interested. We've got quite a long list of guests, but we're going to always be looking for guests. If you know anybody super interesting that you want us to interview, whatever, give us a shout on LinkedIn or Twitter or any other social media that we use. You can find all that information, I think, on the new Books Network page, and I'll just hand it over to Richard to.
Yeah, I'll just add to that, you know, we're really interested in nominations for speakers. If you should figure out in the notes under this podcast how to subscribe. You can reach us through LinkedIn or Twitter. About the New Books Network, I've recently invested in the New Books Network. It's run by a very nice American called Marshall Poe, who's a retired professor. It's the largest author interview podcast network in the world. It gets between 1.3 and 1.5 million downloads a month. That's 60 or 70% up from 6 months ago. So it's growing fast. And as the NBN grows, it's moving beyond its roots of hosts interviewing authors about their new books to different channels. Last week we interviewed an author, as it happens, but we're definitely looking for people, not just people who've written books. And the reason I migrated my previous podcast onto the NBN is that there's a network effect, that the more people who listen, the more people get to know about different episodes. And right now the NBN is belting out 12 podcasts a day, which is quite a lot, and it'll be going up. So do we have anything else? So yeah, if you like this, subscribe, share, encourage people to join. If you think of someone you'd like us to interview, encourage them to get in touch with them. And apart from that, I think I'll let Keeman just close this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that we've already had some interviews, and like I'm like super enjoying this. I mean, like we've got some really, really cool people, you know, and some of them are from our networks and some of them are completely outside of our networks. Actually, hats off to you, Richard. I don't know where you got some of the people that we got. I think they're like, they're fascinating. Obviously, the people that I know are fascinating as well. So, I'm actually just honestly, from my perspective, I'm really enjoying this, and I think you will too. I think we're trying to get out, you know, just the nice juicy bits of the stories of these interesting individuals.
And on that note, let's end this podcast. Thank you very much for listening.